We're going to move now to appeal 25-1890, William Clements versus Gunner Optics, LLC. We'll begin with oral argument, Mr. Engdahl from you.
Morning, and may it please the court. District Court's decision below rests on three fundamental errors.
Before we get into that, I have another question about jurisdiction, this time about subject matter jurisdiction. Why is there subject matter jurisdiction here?
So this is an appeal from district court's decision.
That's appellate jurisdiction. Why is there subject matter jurisdiction in the district court? This case is under the Class Action Fairness Act, which requires, at a minimum, minimal diversity. So we need to know the citizenship of all parties. Do we know that?
Yes, hold on one moment. I mean, I believe, so the citizenship of the plaintiff is here in Chicago.
That's what your brief says.
Believe,
what's the citizenship of Gunner Optics?
I believe Gunner is based in California. I'll defer.
What does that have to do with its citizenship? Your brief, and for that matter, Gunner Optics' brief, treat a limited liability company as if it were a corporation. Your brief says that it's a California LLC with its principal place of business in California, but it's not a corporation. That's the rule for corporations. For an LLC, we need to know the membership and the citizenship of every member. And if any member is a partner, we need to know the citizenship of every member or partner. And I don't see that in the brief.
Well, at this point, I think we could provide supplemental briefing on this. I don't think this should be an obstacle here.
Why? Do you know who all the members are and what their citizenship is?
I do not. I'll have to defer to my friend on the other side.
Well,
see if that's been disclosed.
Your friend on the other side also treats an LLC as if it were a corporation. And I ask this not only because we have a question about subject matter jurisdiction. We have a question of abstention. Under 28 U.S.C. 1332 D4. D4 says that if the claim is principally located in one state, which every Biometric Privacy Act claim necessarily is, if the defendant is a citizen of Illinois, of the filing state, then the district court must abstain. It's compulsory. Until we know the citizenship of every member of Gunner Optics, we don't know how to apply that exclusion.
Yeah, it's an
issue. We've got serious problems here.
If the court would likely be happy to provide supplemental briefing on all these issues with that result.
I suspect that will be necessary.
You may continue with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. So first, the court read an overly broad, expansive healthcare exclusion into BIPA that's contrary to the plain language of the statute. It's contrary to the meaning of the term healthcare treatment under BIPA itself, and it's contrary to guidance on a very closely related issue. And second, even assuming that the conduct here qualified as healthcare treatment, district court failed to properly evaluate whether the biometric data that was actually collected by Gunner's ETO was used for the particular purpose of providing healthcare treatment. It runs afoul of the language of BIPA and the Illinois Supreme Court's admonition in those.
Do we know whether Clements used the virtual try-on features in connection with buying prescription glasses versus non-prescription glasses?
As the case comes to the court, that's not alleged in the complaint, whether it was prescription versus non-prescription. I'm not aware whether he was searching for prescription versus non-prescription. We think either way, we fall outside of that HIPAA exclusion.
Well, the class definition is broad enough to encompass both. Is that right?
It is.
So I take it then that the intended scope of the lawsuit is to cover both prescription and non-prescription sunglasses or glasses?
That is our intention, yes.
If we think the answer as to the central question here on the merits differs, as between prescription and non-prescription glasses, What are the next steps? Because I'm not sure the district court thought of it that way.
Well, again, on the merits of your question, I think that it's not an issue that's presented here on the facts. It's not an issue that the district court ruled on. It's not an issue that the other side presented in its low or here. Again, the allegations in the complaint distinguish between versus non-prescription. But to get to the core of your question, the statutory construction question and this point that I just raised about particular purpose, we think even for prescription and non-prescription alike, make this case not one where the HIPAA exclusion would apply.
Got a lot of law going in different directions. It also seems to be bifurcated as between Illinois law and or the District of Illinois law, state versus federal. State law, Mosby especially, speaks to the interpretation of statute. We also have to noodle through the relationship to the regulations here. Are you asking us to? It's your position that a number of these NDIL cases should be. Is that true?
A number of the NDIL
Cases.
Illinois cases, correct. So, well, I'm not sure that your opinion has to reverse them here. We think they were incorrect. They were, their task in those cases was applying Illinois law and predicting what Illinois courts, the Illinois Supreme Court would do in interpreting Illinois law. And Marino, I think, clearly shows that they were, there's at least strong evidence that they were incorrect in that forecast of what Illinois courts would do. Well, if I can return to my third point of where the court committed error. In arriving at those first two errors I identified, the court drew improper inferences against Clements and reached factual conclusions that were both unsupported by and, in fact, contrary to the allegations in the complaint. And all three of these errors are absolutely.
I'm interested in what weight you give to the regulations that the district court and the brief cited after Loper Bright.
What, please? Could you help me understand the question?
Yes, these regulations were written, and I think this case began at a time when Chevron was in court. Chevron has been overruled and replaced by Loper Bright. The district court's decision and party to brief seem to rely very heavily on interpreting, sussing out the meaning of these regulations. And I'm asking whether these regulations have any weight after Loper Bright.
So we've never argued that they have no weight, but certainly they have perhaps diminished value in setting boundaries of what is healthcare here compared to before Loper Bright.
Would you like to reserve the remainder of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would like
Oh,
to.
very good. Thank you, Mr. Engdahl. We're going to move now to argument on behalf of the appellee, Mr. Miller. Your Honor.
And let us start with subject matter jurisdiction. Your supplemental jurisdictional statement asserts that the plaintiff's jurisdictional statement is complete and correct. It isn't remotely correct because it treats an LLC as if it were a corporation for purposes of 1332. So, what do we know on the record about the members of Gunner Optics and their citizenship and the members' citizenship?
Thank you for the question, Robert. To the best of my knowledge, all the members are from the state of California.
What do we know about who they are? If you say they're from the state of California because you're assuming that they're LLCs and that they're corporations, we need to know their identities. The rules of this court are quite clear. You must identify every member and every member's citizenships, of which there can be many. It's not enough just to say, well, I think they.
Well, I don't know exactly, right?
So my question remains, on this record, Do we know their members? Do we know who the members are and what the citizenship of the members is?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Then we need to get it on the record.
Understood, Your Honor. But just for some context, the individuals that are the members, now certainly they could have relocated and established citizenship in Wyoming, for instance, but at the time they are all mainly individuals that left.
The time that matters is the date this suit was filed.
Understood, Your Honor. Essentially, the district court's decision in this matter was well-reasoned with direction from the Illinois Supreme Court, along with the judicial admissions of the plaintiff itself, specifically paragraph 4, which defines the purpose. And with regards to here in the Seventh Circuit, in Jackson, Marion County, Seventh Circuit emphasized that the factual allegations of the plaintiff are binding judicial admissions, and the plaintiff can plead themselves on court by alleging the facts that they gave the complaint. Paragraph 4 of the complaint clearly states that the purpose of the VTO, Trion Software, is based on to protect the eyes from Blu-ray. So that being said, the court essentially reasoned that with Mobi,
the problem, of course, is that your client's own website describes the function of this software as evaluating how the glasses look rather than how they perform.
But they are
given the rule that we have to accept everything that could be shown on the plaintiff's complaint, don't we have to take it that the function is exactly what Gunner Optics itself said to see how they look? And then we have to turn to the regulations, if they have any weight at all, to see whether those regulations make federal coverage depend on, well, I suppose the right word is optics, but I'm not trying to make a pun.
You are correct about the website. However, the website does have a provision in there that the Blu-ray glasses protect the eyes from blue light. Protects the eyes. So that in itself is defined by, if we look at the second prong of BIPA, which was the HIPAA exemption, unlike Merino, okay, Merino is a different, the terms were defined differently because in the statute itself, you would just use ordinary term. However, under the second prong of HIPAA, essentially, there's guidance from the Illinois Supreme Court on Mobley as it relates to defining exactly what constitutes the healthcare provision.
Building that out, Mr. Miller, at least I may look at the case law differently than you. Strikes me you've got an Illinois Court of Appeals and Illinois case, which are going one direction, and these NDIL cases, almost like a pack, going in a different direction. Obviously, if the jurisdictional hurdles here end up being cleared and we're applying Illinois law, we're doing the eerie prediction, which would mean a case like Mosby's got a lot to do with our ultimate resolution. You see the case law differently?
No. I believe the difference between the two different prongs, and Mobley using that as an example, or Merino. Mobley, the court encourages under the second prong that they need to look under HIPAA for the definition of what constitutes healthcare services. In Merino, which is the appellate case, that essentially there was no definition for patient and establishes that clearly in Merino that the plaintiff wasn't a patient. So those terms were taken from like Webster's Black Dictionary or whatever, and those terms were common sense, or those terms were used. And using those terms to come to the decision as it relates to the Merino appellate court decision, they obviously found that there was no patient. However, I would point out that in Merino, they do come to a understanding as it relates to healthcare itself, which is basically defined by efforts made to maintain, restore, or promote someone's physical, mental, or emotional well-being. So with regards to the actual blue light glasses, they are, and these are the cases from the federal district court here, essentially maintaining vision by making sure the glasses fit appropriately to ensure that the vision doesn't deteriorate.
So, Mr. Miller, does Gunner consider itself to be a healthcare provider subject to HIPAA, and does it, you know, comply accordingly?
They do also prescription sunglasses. So with regards to that, they would be subject to HIPAA.
So you agree that selling prescription glasses is the provision of healthcare under that second prong of the BIPA healthcare exemption?
I would agree with you, Your Honor. I would also agree that non-prescription glasses like the blue light glasses fall into that as well.
Do we know from this record? Is this premature for this to have been resolved in the manner it was?
I'm sorry.
Prescription versus non-prescription. The allegations in the complaint. Is this premature for us to be reviewing this type of a... was the district court premature in entering the order that it did, given the record we have? Because we have nothing in there as to prescription versus non-prescription.
Correct. I think that it's self-explanatory that prescription glasses would fall under HIPAA. And so,
self-explanatory? I find absolutely not that statute to be self-explanatory. Indeed, lacks important definitional clauses, which is why I think everyone has gone out to the regulations, which have problems of their own. But I have the same question for you as I did for your colleague, which is, what force, if any, do those regulations have after Loper Broad?
I believe those regulations are guidelines to be used, especially for definitional purposes as it relates to...
You would have said the same thing before Loper Broad. Do you think Loper Broad is just irrelevant?
No, I don't think it should.
So what effect does it have concretely?
I believe it tends to dilute those regulations.
Can understand my concern that neither side's brief mentions Loper Bright, and I'm not sure that either side understands what's happened with the Supreme Court without the effect of federal regulations. Are these regulations expressly authorized by statute or not?
Well, they are ingrained in HIPAA, and that is officially a statute, federal statute.
No. Some statutes say the agency has the authority to fill in the blanks by regulations. That kind of statute is outside the scope of Loper Bright. Is there a clause like that in HIPAA?
I don't know. That.
That's a critical question.
Tim, any other questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Engdahl, we'll go back to you now for a rebuttal argument.
Thank you. Now, Gunner pointed to paragraph 4, our complaint, and this is the principal argument of their response brief as well. But if you actually look at the text of paragraph 4 there, which I urge you to do, what they're really pointing to there is just the phrase, quote, protect the eyes against digital strain, which is describing the nature of the product that they sell, not the VTO that's actually at issue in this case. So they're still faced with the fundamental problem here that there are no allegations connecting the VTO tool, which we allege is purely for showing how the glasses look on customers' face, with the products that they sell. So that argument really has limited effect. Now, getting to the statutory construction, the Supreme Court held just last year in Delgado, as we say in our briefs, that the statutory definitions like those at issue here must be read in light of the conventional meaning of the terms they define. And we think that principle and the ordinary meaning of those terms under the HIPAA definition, both point in the same direction. For retail websites, virtual tool for trying on sunglasses is simply not healthcare treatment. And unless the court has any further questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Engdahl. Thank you, Mr. Miller. The case will be taken under advisement.